Hello, this is Gidon Rothstein, and this is Perek Mem of Sefer Yechezkel, chapter 40 of the book of Yechezkel, and from here to the end of the book, so there are nine more chapters, 40, 41, 42, 43. Nine more chapters. These last nine chapters are a completely separate unit, and they will be predictions about the future, about the way Eretz Yisrael will look in the future, the wonders of the future of Eretz Yisrael. So these are nevuot of nechama, but they also of comfort, and these are fully comfort. But what I wanted to point out about this is that it shows that the structure of the book of Yechezkel is very interesting. You have the nevuot from before the destruction, from before the Beit HaMikdash gets destroyed, and those are by and large nevuot of tochacha, of Yechezkel telling us what we're doing wrong and why we are going to be punished and how we're not going to recognize the reasons behind our punishment, and yet the punishment is just and proper and appropriate. And then once the Churban happens, or close up to that, all of a sudden you start having nevuot of comfort. You have nevuot of predictions of problems and retribution towards the nations that mistreated us, that were vehicles of our destruction. And then you have nevuot and nechama to us, and reminders to us that God deals with us justly, and that God was only giving us that which we deserved because of our various sins, and reminders and the nevuah of the Atzamot HaYeveshot, the attempts to encourage us and to get us to realize that we have the ability to get better. And that culminated, those culminated with the nevuot of Gog and Magog, meaning that process of return seemed, at least in the presentation of Yechezkel, to have many components to it, not to be fully accomplished, even after Edom comes back. And Edom coming back was later on in the process than you might have expected it to. So all along you have this lengthy process with various pieces to it and aspects to it. And then once that is done, so you had Gog and Magog, and you had that end vision that we just saw in the previous chapter. So now there seems to be a huge break, because not all of that was dated, but it seems to have occurred very close to the vicinity of the Churban, of the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash, of the Beit Rishon. But now, this parak, this chapter, opens up with Be'esrim v'chamesh shana legalutenu, be'rosh hashana be'esor lachodesh, be'arba esre shana achar ha'shehu keta ha'ir be'etam ha'yom hazeh ha'ita alay ad Hashem v'yave oti shama. So the dating is remarkable. It's in the 25th year of his exile, which, as Rashi points out, the 25th year of Yechezkel's exile is the 14th year of Churban Bayit. Right? It's 14 years after Churban Bayit. And it says on Rosh Hashanah, on the 10th of the month. So Rashi points out, based on the Gemara, says it was a Yovel year. The tradition is that the Beit HaMikdash was destroyed in the 36th year of the Yovel. So that 14 years later was a Yovel year. And in the Yovel year, the key date, the key time, is not Rosh Hashanah. The key time is really Yom HaKippurim, because it's on that day that everybody goes free and that all the land reverts. So it's on that day, and it's 14 years after the city has been destroyed. In the middle of that day, all of a sudden, so it's Yom Kippur of this year, Yechezkel has this powerful vision. Now, Rashi already, we are used to... So I apologize, I had an interruption, but I'm pretty sure what I was saying was that he's in the middle of Yom Kippur in the 14 years later, meaning the Beit has been destroyed. We haven't heard very much. He hasn't recorded very much of the nevuot that he's had. He has, for all we know, just lived his life. And then he has this strong vision. And here Rashi, this is where I was up to. Here Rashi himself says that, that this is all in a vision. That it's not, this is going to be a Pasuk Bet, but it's not that he actually went to Yerushalayim and saw the things that we're seeing, but he had a vision in which the Pasuk Bet reads, "B'mar'ot Elokim havi'eni l'Eretz Yisrael," in a vision of God, he brought me to the land of Israel, "V'yinicheni l'ha'gavo ha'ma'od," and he put me on a very high mountain. We'll talk about that in a second. "V'alav k'mivnei ir minegem," and it seems like there is a city built to the south of it. So Rashi himself there says, this is all in a vision. It's not that Yechezkel was dragged, was taken to Yerushalayim. It's rather that he was taken in a vision. He saw himself in Yerushalayim. So this is all a vision that Yechezkel has for the future, and it's going to be a vision of first the Beit HaMikdash, and it's going to be visions about the broader Eretz Yisrael over the next nine chapters. Now, one of the themes that I will be stressing, the Radak brings it up in a couple of places and I'll note them, but it comes up again and again, is that the purpose of these visions is to encourage the Jewish people. It's to give them nechama, to give them comfort, and to give them a recognition of what would happen. Now, some of them come true in Bayit Sheni, in the second Beit HaMikdash, some of the visions of the Mikdash, but many don't, and they're assumed, therefore, to be left for the third Beit HaMikdash. Part of the question that I have, though, and this will be part of the reason that I'm not going to be so careful, there are people who build models of this Beit HaMikdash and try to figure it out, and if you look at the Dat Mikra, he notes that there are several different models, and he tells you which model he relied on, and I think he tried himself, and he consulted with his son, who was an architect, and he tries to build and get an understanding of what this Mikdash looks like. But one of the questions we need to know is, does a future Mikdash have to look like this? Or was this a guarantee that at least we would have a Mikdash that looks like this, but that there's room, if it should work out in a different way, for whatever reason that history works out, there's room to have a different kind of a Mikdash as well. So that kind of a question that we've raised before comes up here as well, and does affect the way in which we learn this Perek. Meaning, if this Perek is going to tell you exactly how the Mikdash is going to learn, that gives one level of importance, or a certain level of importance, to the vision that's being had here. If the point of the Perek, though, is to tell us that there would be, at least be a Mikdash that looks like this, but could be the Mikdash in the end, the future Mikdash will look different, so then it changes, at least somewhat, the level of attention or the level of interest and detail that we have about this Beit HaMikdash that we're being told about here. So he's having this vision, and in, to get back into his mind for a second, or to his experience of life for a second, so it's sort of an image of a person who's been struggling along, wandering along. There's not a lot of information coming from Hashem. There's just destruction, and it was a tremendously destructive destruction. It was a tremendously shattering experience for Jews of the time. Right, the destruction of that Beit HaMikdash was a shock, because they had continued to think of it as Beit Hashem, as the house of Hashem, that Hashem would never let it be destroyed. So the experience of destruction was one, Yechezkel perhaps somewhat less so, because he knew what was coming and he knew why it was coming and he had all the nevuot that we've learned together, but it's a shattering time. And then 14 years later, so 14 years of almost blank, and then all of a sudden he has this series of very sharp, very detailed visions of the Beit HaMikdash, and that's what we're going to see now. So in these Marot Elokim, he's brought to Eretz Yisrael and he's put onto a very high mountain. So Rashi on the very high mountain says, Shekenhu atid liot gavoa. It's going to in the future be extremely high, and then it'll be like a city to the south, that he sees off in the south. So Rashi seems to think that the Har HaBayit will be raised. There'll be some, I don't know, we would got a construction project to make it higher. We're going to see later on that it's certainly going to be expanded in size, so maybe in height as well. But the Radak thinks that, no, that's not what Har Gavoah means. Har Gavoah means that Har HaBayit is going to be high. Ki ken yeh b'ma'aleh. It's going to be in its characteristics, in its value, in the respect accorded it. It will be extremely high. And then also, of course, it is high, it is physically tall, at least in comparison to its surroundings as well. Right? And then he notes that the city of Jerusalem will be south of this mountain, and he sees it to him. Here's the first example of it, where the Radak says, V'hara'u binyan b'ayit ha'atid. He shows him the future house, the future Beit HaMikdash, the nechem b'nevu'azo Beit Yisrael, to give comfort to the Jewish people that they should not abandon all hope. In terms of this being on Yom Kippur, I would just point out a tidbit that's interesting. The Tosfot Nedarim mentioned that Rabbeinu Tam thought that to say Kol Nidre with Yom Kippurim She'avar, that we're going to get rid of all our Nedarim that we made in the past year, Yom Kippurim She'avar Ad Yom Kippurim Haba, Ad Kippurim Hazeh, or Haba, doesn't work, because you can't yourself provide Hatara, you can't relieve yourself of Nidarim, of vows that you made in the previous year. You need that Beitin for that, and that's the custom we have of doing Hatara Nidarim. So he therefore changes the gears to tell me Yom Kippurim Ze, Yom Kippurim Haba, Aleinu Latova. Then he points out that in the Gemara, it doesn't talk about that. It talks about me Rosh Hashanah until Rosh Hashanah. So he says, yes, but our Pasuk shows us that there are times when Yom Kippur is thought of as a Rosh Hashanah. And Rashi's pointing it. Rashi pointed out that that is in the year of Yovel. Yom Kippur is like a Rosh Hashanah in the sense that it is what kicks off the year and sets the tone for the entire year. So now, Pasuk Gimel Vayaveu Tishama Vine Ish Marehu Kimarei Nechoshet. He sees a man who looks like copper. The JPS says that he shines like copper, but Rashi says Ke'ein Ziv HaChayot. Right, he has the glow of the chayot that he saw in the Merkava, in the chariot, in the earlier chapters of the Sefer. Uftil pishtim biyado ukne hamidah. He has in his hand a rope of linen and a measuring rod. So the rope of linen is for measuring long distances, because if you have a stiff, straight measuring rod, like a kne hamidah, which is what the other thing he had, he's standing in this gate, you have just the straight stick, so that becomes a problem when you're going to measure long tracts of land, because land goes up and down, and you can't get the full and correct measurement. So this figure that Yechezkel sees is ready to measure. He's ready to measure both vast tracts of land and then to measure things that take a regular, ordinary measuring ruler, like we would call it. Pasuk Dalet, by the Be'elai Ha'ish ben Adam, Re'ei Ve'enecho Vo'znecho Shema, he says to him, look with your eyes and see, hear with your ears. Pay a lot of attention. Everything that I'm going to show you, because it was for the very purpose of seeing these things and of witnessing these that you have been brought here. And the purpose of you being here is to tell everything that you've seen to the Jewish people. And the presumption is, for based on earlier nivuot that we had, the presumption is that they're now going to believe him, because having suffered the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash as he predicted, the times that he predicted, and all those kinds of things, they should now be ready to accept his word. Saviv. So he says there is a wall on the other side of the bayit, around and around. So there is there's a wall outside of the bayit around it, and the man has this kneh hamidah, he has this measuring rod. Now this measuring rod is made up of six amot, and an amah, we're told, is an amah made up of an amah v'tofach. So Rashi points out that there was a time when they altered the measurements, that for a while five tvachim, five fists worth, was what made up an amah, and then there came a time when they added to the measurement and they made it six for whatever reasons, and so this is the amah that we tend to use now, and that's what is being said. It's an amah v'tofach. Of the original amah, you've expanded it into being you've expanded it to being an amah v'tofach. And then, but the rod, the measuring rod, has six of those. So just for perspective, we nowadays in halacha, when we see the measurement of an amah, there's a debate in halacha as to whether an amah, and there are amounts ranging from 18 inches for an amah is one suggestion, and I believe the highest number that's been suggested is 24 inches for an amah, maybe even a little higher, but let's say 24 inches would be 2 feet. So I'm going to try to translate and make sure that we understand that when we measure things and see things, so you measure, I'm going to take those two ranges just to give you a sense of the range of what we're talking about. That depending what the right answer is to that question, whether it's 18 inches or 2 feet, the amounts of the heights that we're talking about here become, the heights and the distances will become different. But in this context, in this instance, we're saying that this wall, which is outside of Har HaBayit, right? It's a choma on the north of, so it's Bayit Echad HaRani Bitzvon HaHar on the north of the mountain, and then there's a wall around it. So the Radak points out that the whole Har is called the Bayit. That's an important piece, that all of Har HaBayit in some sense is part of the Beit HaMikdash. Right? Halachically it's true, because there's certain people who can't go into Har HaBayit in certain levels of Tumah. Already Har HaBayit is a level of being part of the Beit HaMikdash. And so that, in that sense, the mountain is all part of it. Now, he measured this wall, and it's 6 amot. So 6 amot means it's somewhere between 9 and 12 feet. Rashi points out that this was a relatively low wall, and the reason for this wall being low is that there's a halacha that when somebody is burning a Parah Aduma outside of Yerushalayim, and he's on a far, on a nearby mountain, he's supposed to be able to look over the wall and into, into the Beit HaMikdash. So therefore, this wall was relatively low, but relatively low here seems to me somewhere between 9 and 12 feet, which if you're standing next to it is rather high. Pasuk Vav, Vayavo El Sha'ar, Asher Panav Derech HaKadima, Vayal Ma'alota, Vayamor Etzaf HaShar, Kane Echad Rochav, Ve'etzaf Echad Kane Echad Rochav. So he goes up to a gate that faces to the east, and he walks up the steps, and he measures the Saf HaShar. And it was, and it seems like it was the depth of it was Kaneh Echad Rochav, was 6 feet, or it might have been 6 feet wide, just six amot, which is 9 to 12 feet, either wide or deep. And right, so Rashi says on Saf Echad Muzashinit Echad Mitzafon Echad Mideron, that on the right, that it seems like these are the entrance ways were 9 to 12 feet long. And then there were these ta'im. There are these cells. There are these rooms on the sides of these openings, right? Then the Rashi says there were three of them on the right of the gate and three of them on the left of the gate, and they were near, according to Rashi, at least they were near the eastern wall of the outer courtyard. The outer courtyard of the Beit HaMikdash is called the Ezrat HaNashim. And there were three of these on that outer wall. And then between these, Rashi says that between these cells, between these rooms, in these little offices, there were five amot, which again will be between 7.5 and 10 feet of wall, of thickness of wall, the way Rashi understands it. So he goes up, he's in the gate, and he's Vatakane Echad Orech Kane Echad Rochav, Vesaf Hashar Meitzel Ulam Hashar Meabayit Kane Echad. And then the threshold of this gate, of the inner part of the gate, was also one of these Kanim deep. Vatakane Echad Orech Kane Echad Rochav, Vinatayim Chamesh Amot. I'm sorry, I read that already. Vayamar Ulam Hashar Meabayit Kane Echad. And then he measures the Ulam. So the ulam is inside of the gate. Rashi says there was like a room or an office that was made into that had a sort of an auditorium, a place to it. And it's one kaneh. Vayamar ulam hashar shmone amot ve'ilav shtayim amot ve'ulam hashar mehabayit. So there are elav here, and Rashi says called elim hamrim be'yan. And kamin ilanot agulin. They're like rounded trees, it seems like Rashi is saying. Asuyim ne'av negazit, made of hewn stone, and they're standing at the doorways to Hamzoris, one on the right and one on the left, in the entryway, right? On the doorposts, sort of. And then ulame hashar, Rashi says, Uzrata Yisrael hayu boltin letzad achutz. There were these ulamim that would stick out to the outside and into the side of the Ezrat Nashim. Oh, the Ezrat Nashim went towards the inside, and they would be right opposite the gates, and there would be an ulam keneged ulam. There would be one entryway or one room opposite the other, and it would be a thing of beauty that would be so parallel to each other. Pasuk Yud v'tayei hashar derech hakadim shloshah mipo shloshah mipo, and there are three cells or recesses on either side of the wall. Amida achat l'shlotam, and they're all made of the same size. Amida achat le'elim mipo mipo, and these trees. These elim, but the JPS English has it as supports rather than trees. But Rashi thinks that they're these. Rashi could also have it being arches. That could be what Rashi means by rounded trees. So the width, it seems, of the opening was 10 amot, and then the length of the gate was 13 amot. So the question of length and pasuk yud aleph. So the JPS thinks that it was the doorway, and then the gate itself was longer because the doorway might have been narrowed by something within it. But it's Rashi thinks that there was an extra amma and a half on either side, and then Rashi points out that you can't get rochav and orech confused with each other. That in each context there might be different things, because here when it comes to the gate, the doorway itself, the height is called the lame. And the width is from post to post. But when you come to an ulam, so there it goes from, it's going length, deep depth wise, into. So Rashi's pointing out that the definition of length and width and height and the use of the terms rochav, right, will switch for each thing. So in the doorway itself, when it says rochav petach hashar esar amot, that means from doorpost to doorpost. But orach hashar being shloshesrei ama would be the height of the doorway. And then when it comes to the ulamot, and it gives you different measurements, that'll be different because their length won't be height, length will be length because they actually have some real meaningful length. Pasuk Yud Bet Ugvulif Nehataot Ama Echat, and there was a barrier of some sort. There was a border of some sort before these offices, recesses, cubicles of one Ama. Ama Echat Gavul Mipo V'Atash Sheish Amot Mipo, and each of the ta'im of these little offices or recesses or openings were 6 amot from here and 6 amot from here. Vayamar et shar migag hata legago. Then he measures the gate from the roof of one of these to the roof of another one. Rochav esrim v'chamesh amot. It was 25 amot, and there was petach neged patach, opening opposed to opening. So I want to make clear that I don't want to pretend that I am going to be very clear about the structure of this Beit HaMikdash, because results not clear in the psukim. There's much debate, as I mentioned before. And secondly, because it's hard to do verbally, it's the kind of thing where if you want to sit down and draw up a model, you certainly should feel free to do so, but it's very difficult to visualize, certainly for me. And then finally, as I mentioned before, I'm also not positive that I'm going to spend a lot of time on it, because I'm not even certain that we are required to be bound by these structures. And that's a question to continue asking, is when it comes time to build another Beit HaMikdash, assuming that Mashiach comes, not assuming that Mashiach comes, but assuming that when Mashiach comes and Mashiach doesn't say, well, here's the blueprint, we have to do it this way because that's what Yechezkel said, how much of what Yechezkel said will be binding on us, how much not? So in Beit Sheni, for example, the Radak notes several times, they built some of it according to what Yechezkel said and some of it not. So is that because they were unable to financially, but they really wanted to do it exactly what Yechezkel said, or is it because there is some insight or understanding that this house that's being shown him is largely for the purpose of encouragement? It sets sort of standards of beauty and standards of size, but those could be applied differently in different eras. So that's a question that will come up again when we talk about the thickness of walls, for example. So if there's walls of, Rashi before said there were walls of 5 amot thick, which was either 7.5 or 10 feet, do we need to make those walls that thick, or is that because they tended to use stone? So if we used a different material now, would we be able to do it with different materials? Is that A, possible? Are we allowed to use anything other than stone? And B, assuming that we can, or that we know how to build with stone better so that we can get better support with less stone, is it required to be that much thick, or was that a technical requirement of the time? Pasuk Yudalid, Vayas Elilim Shishim Ama Ve'el El HaChatzer HaShar Saviv Saviv. So then he makes, he sees in this bayit that there are Elim, these Elim that Rashi pointed out, these rounded arches, rounded trees that are now 60 Amot. Rashi thinks they're 60 Amot high. So 60 Amot, again, is either 90 feet or 120 feet. This is hugely high today, let alone in their days. And they are all around the Chatzer, all around the courtyard. And then, before the Shar Ha'iton, Rashi says the Shar Ha'iton is the gate through which people tended to enter. And so that's why it's called Iton, because Iton in Aramaic is coming, like Ata, to come. So that's a remarkable use of Aramaic in Tanakh, because it suggests, at least perhaps, that this Shar has been called Iton, because Yechezkel was living in Babel. Otherwise, why would you use the Aramaic word? I mean, there is some Aramaic in Tanakh. There's a lot of Aramaic in Daniel, for example, because Daniel lives in Babel, and that was the language. But here, it's being called Shar HaEton, even though it's a vision of the future Beit HaMikdash, perhaps as a concession to the people to whom Yechezkel is talking. I would just point out, in my defense, in Pasuk Yud Gimel, where I said it as well, the Radak also says he has a problem with Rashi's perspective, whatever it was. And then he says, I want you to know that the measurements of all of this bayit are not clear because they're about a future building. And what a person explains about them, according to their own intellect, their own understanding, you don't have to rely on them. And what you see in tradition, in Midot, and it tells you in the Gemara or the Mishnah that this is the way it was built, so then you have to accept it because that's tradition. And the rest, you leave it, and when Eliyahu comes, you will come to understand it. And he points out, Chazal say that as well, about a few things. They say, Parashazo atit Eliyahu lidorsha. In other words, we don't really know how to understand it, how to make sense of it. That being true, A, I'm not going to work tremendously hard to get to understand it. There are plenty of people who have worked harder at this and come up with better ideas, and I'm not going to summarize them all for us here. And then secondly, when Eliyahu comes, we'll get a fuller understanding. And the question of fuller understanding may also include, to my mind, may also include pieces of this puzzle that were said to Yechezkel, but that are not necessarily required. Rather, they were just said as a form of nechama, a form of comfort, but there may be other ways that will be equally legitimate in terms of building the future Beit HaMikdash. The chalonot atumot el hataim ve'el eleheima lifnima lashar saviv saviv v'chein la'ilamot v'chalonot saviv saviv lifnima ve'el ayel timurim. So the JPS English has the recesses and their supports at windows with frames on the interior of the gate complex on both sides. And the interiors of the vestibules also had windows on both sides, and the supports were adorned with palms. So you have these rooms with their various supports, and there's decorations on them. The piece that I would point out is, Rashi points out, chalonot atumot, is that these rooms had windows, but the windows weren't open to anything. So these weren't windows for the providing light, because they were completely internal windows. They were walls with complete enclosures, and the windows opened up from one to the other. So the windows that you could see into the next room over, but there was no outside source of light to which any of these windows were opening up. So these windows were there for the beauty of the decoration, not because they actually provided light. So it brings me to the outer courtyard, and Rashi says that the ritzpah that we're talking about here is that they made an attic area for the Beit HaMikdash, all around the chatzir, all around the courtyard, and this upper area had these various lishachot, these various offices, various rooms for various tasks that had to go on in the Beit HaMikdash. Meaning, where did you do the business of the Beit HaMikdash? Some of it happened on the floor of the Azara in the actual courtyard, and some of it happened in side rooms. And so the side rooms, there were some on the original ground floor, but they also built the second floor, and many of the rooms and much of the business that had to be conducted happened there, and there were 30 of these rooms. Haritzpah al ketef hashi'arim lumat orech hashi'arim haritzpah hatachtona, and these were flanking on the gates, meaning they went around from the gates, and they weren't on the length parallel that of the gates. Right, al ketef hashi'arim gova shar hachatzarim afsik ha'aliyah, the height of the sha'ar of the gate would stop the second floor, and it's all around on those sides. Pasuk Yud Tet Bayamod Rocham Lifni Hashara Tachtona Lifni Chatzir Apnimi Michutz Mea Amas. He measures the width of this lower court from in front of the inner gate to in front of the outer gate, and it's 100 amot. 100 amot meaning Hakadim Hatzafon, which is the east and the north. Right, Hakadim Hatzafon. So it's not clear what we mean by Hakadim Hatzafon in terms of east and north, because we're measuring the whole gate. But that's what he measures, and it's 100 amot. So here's just an example of this. 100 amot, is that an upper limit? Is that what Yechezkel happened to see in his vision? So 100 amot is 150 to 200 feet, depending on how we measure an amah. So is that the limit of what it could be? Could this building be much, much bigger? That would be especially the question, because later in Yechezkel we're going to see the sizes of the tract of land set aside for Har HaBayit Beit HaMikdash in this future Beit HaMikdash, and it's going to be much, much larger. So that's a question. It's also a question I always think of in terms of the size of the Beit HaMikdash, in terms of how many people are going to show up there. So we will see in later Prakim of Yechezkel that the question of how many people will be showing up at the Beit HaMikdash regularly will be an important question. But aside from that, meaning that it might be that not so many people are showing up, even though you build it, that generally people would stay away, and therefore you wouldn't need such size. But other than that, I mean, there are millions of Jews in the world, even after our numbers have been decimated by persecutions throughout the years, not to belittle the Holocaust as one of those, and yet there are millions and millions of Jews. So if there's a rebuilt Beit HaMikdash, and non-Jews are coming to share in this experience, so you'd think that we would need a bigger building. So whether or not that will be true, we'll have to wait and see. Pasuk Chaf v'hashamar shepanav derech hatzafon, lechatzir achitona madat or kov v'rechbo. So the gate that faced to the north on the outer gate, on the outer courtyard,
he measures its length and its width. Ve'ta'av shalosha mipo, shalosha mipo. It too had three recesses on either side. Ve'ila ve'ilamaf haya kemidat hashar rishon, which is like the first one. Chamishim amot arkov. Ve'rochav chamesh ve'esrim ba'amah. It was 50 amot long and 25 amot wide. Ve'chalonav ve'ilamav ve'timorav kemidat hashar shepanav derech hakadim. Umalot sheva ye'aluvo ve'ilamav v'tnehem. It's very similar to the first one, although there are seven steps that you go up to reach it, and it's got it's a vestibule, an opening ahead of them, meaning ahead of or at the inner side, perhaps, of the of this gate. And then there's another gate, like the east gate. The north gate has a gate leading into the inner court, and there too it's 100 amot from gate to gate. It's got the same measurements. And it's got windows for its various rooms and vestibules, like the ones we mentioned before. And it's 50 amah long and 25 wide. And it's got the seven steps. It's got the same kinds of decorations and supports on the various sides. And it's 100 amot from the outer gate to the inner gate. And now we're in the inner forecourt from the south. And it too has the same measurements. Then it's got elamot all around as well, and the length of them is 25 cubits, and it's 5 cubits, 5 amot wide. And here it's got 8 steps. So now you measure the gate on the east side again, and this is in the Shar HaPnimi, and it's going to have similar measurements and similar size. And here again you have the 8 steps going into the inner gate. And in the north also you have the same measurements. You have the ta'av, elav, ve'elamav, v'chalon olo saviv saviv, orech chamishim amav, orech chamish v'asim amav, ve'elav lechatzer achitona, v'timorim el elav mipo, mipo, u'shmoneh ma'alot me'alav. Okay, so that's all of the gates and all of the measurements of the gates of the outer court and the inner court. Pasuk lamed chet, and I'm trying to move now because there are 49 psukim in this parak and I don't want to go too far over time. V'dishka u'fitcha be'elim ha'she'arim, and then there's a chamber, there's a room with its opening into the gate, and this is where you would wash the korbanot. Sham yadichu et ha'ula. So Rashi points out that you're gonna slaughter it batzafon in the north, and then you're gonna wash the innards of the korban. Right, animals when you open them up are not so clean, so you're gonna have to wash it out before you do everything with it. So you're gonna wash it out in this lishka. And then in the Ulam Hashar, there were tables. There, he sees tables for the purpose of doing Shkita. So our tradition is they had Shkita in rings. Tosfos in Yoma, Yitarman Aleph says that there were Shulchanot in the Azara. They were really to wash the korbanot. So he says that they would wash the besar kodshim on the shulchanot, but the kirbe kodshim, the innards of the kodshim of the korbanot, which has all sorts of the disgusting stuff from inside the animals, that they would bring to lishka. In other words, the meat that they were going to put on the mizbeach, the actual flesh of the animal, so that they would wash on the shulchanot. But the rest one, so that's what it says here. Lishkot alehem ha'ola. It's not they would check it there; it's that you would wash it there. Relakatei michutza laole lefetach hashar hatzafona shnayim shulchanot velakatei va'acheret shel olam hashar shnayim shulchanot. There are these tables in the two in the different sides of the shah, right? Velakatev mechutza, as one goes up toward the north gate, laolel lepadach shar tafona shnei shulchanot, and also the other ulamot. Arba'a shulchanot mipo, v'arba'a shulchanot mipo, lechetav ashar, shmona shulchanot aleihem yishchatu. So that on either side of the gate, there were four, eight in all, on which you could be shechting them, or at least washing them off. Arba'a shulchanot laolel avnei gazit, orech ama achad, v'cheitzi, v'rocha ama achad, v'cheitzi. So on these four tables that you would have for the ola, in order to be able to do what you want, they were made of hewn stone, or they were cut, well cut stones, it's 1.5 amot long, which means somewhere between 3 feet being the highest, and then one is 9 quarters, which is 2.25. Somewhere between 2.25 and 3 feet long are these tables. So these are a relatively small table. And it's 1 amah high. Alehem vayanich v'lakelim ashishchatu et ha'olah bam v'hazavach. And they could leave there the instruments they used for shchita. V'hashefatayim tofech erchad muchanim v'bayit saviv saviv v'la shulchanav b'sar ha'korban. And then there were also shelves, one tefach wide, and they were ready all around, and that's where you could put the Besar Kodesh on. So the Radak says on Shefatayim, Klish Shoftim Alav Shteik Deirot, Lefichach Nikra B'Lashon Shnayim, right? That's what's called Shefatayim. It's not that you would put the meat there, it's that you could cook the meat there. Rashi has it though that Shefatayim are Unkoliot Shel Barzel Kvuim Bamudei Nan Nasin Shevet HaMikdachayim Mitbachayim v'tzafon litlotu lafshit b'hem in the kodashim. You had these rings at a fairly low level where you could hang and tan and hide, not tan, you could hang and skin the animals, and that's what the purpose was. In other words, they let you hang the animals for the purpose of skinning them after you had done the shechita on them, and that's what we're referring to here. Amichutz l'shar v'nimi l'shkot sharim. And then there were chambers for singers, right? Outside of the inner gate, there were places for the people who sang, and they would be beside the north gate, looking south, and then one beside the east gate, facing north. And they were there probably to sing and to beautify the experience. So Vaydaber Eli, so all of a sudden the Malach who is guiding Yechezkel through this tour speaks to him and he says, Zeha Lishka Shepaneha Derech Hadarom LaKohanim Shomrei Mishmeret HaBayit. This Lishka, which faces to the south, is for the Kohanim who guard the Beit HaMikdash. So besides the Lashachot that we mentioned with the Levim who are the singers, this one is going to be for Kohanim, and it's for them to conduct whatever business they have over there. And this Lishka was for the Kohanim facing the north, and they were the ones who are going to guard the Mizbeach, make sure everything goes right in the Mizbeach, and they are B'nai Tzadok. So why specifically is Tzadok mentioned? So Rashi Radak says it mentioned Tzadok because he was an early Kohen Gadol. He was a Kohen Gadol in the time of Shlomo, and the Kahuna was supposed to stay and be his. So eventually he was deposed for various reasons, and how it worked is unclear. But this, I think, this Nevuah is a hearkening back to those times, the Radak is saying, and therefore we mention Tzadok as being a symbol of the fact that we're going to return to the earliest pristine forms of the Beit HaMikdash. Pasuk Mem Zayin Vayamar Lechatzer Orech Me'a Amah V'Rocha Me'a Amah Merubat. It was a square courtyard V'Mizbeach Le'Nehabayit, and then there's the altar of the Mizbeach before the Beit HaMikdash, and it's 100 amah square, 100 amah each way. So 100 amah we mentioned before, so between 150 and 200 feet. So if it's, if it's 200 feet, let's just pick a good one because the math is easier. So it's a courtyard that's 200 feet by 200 feet, right? It makes 40,000 square feet. So 40,000 square feet is the size of 20 or 30 big, good-sized apartments. So that could hold, theoretically, a few thousand people. It can't hold 20,000 people. So you have to wonder about that question as to how you're going to, if these amounts are meant to be the exact amount. So the fact that you've got 100 amah by 100 amah, which we said is somewhere near 40,000 square feet, so when you're going to put 25, so you're going to have very significant limits on how many people can be there. Pasuk mem chet vayivieni el ulam habayit vayamod el ulam vayamod el ulam chamesh amot mipo vachamesh amot mipo v'rochav hashar shalosh amot mipo v'shalosh amot mipo. So then he takes me into the ulam habayit and he measures it, and the doorway, the opening, is going to be 5 amot on one side and 5 amot on the other side, and 3 amot from one way, 3 amot from the other way. So the way that it opens up, the way that it's measured, is that it's 5 amot deep, and then the width of the opening was 5 amot. The JPS thinks that it's 14 cubits, and then 3 amot, 14 amot, and then 3 amot on either side. But that's not quite what it says. And then Pasuk Mem Tet, Orech HaUlam Esrim Amah, V'Rochav Ashtei Esrim Amah, that the length was 20 amot, and the width was 11 amot, V'Ma'alot Sheyalu Elav, Amudim El Ha'ilim, Echad Mipo, Ve'Echad Mipo, and there were columns on either side that you would, as you walked up to it, and that's as far as we go with this vision. I would just point out that Rashi notes at the end of Pasuk Mem Chet, Ve'ni Yodea, that's a day perusho. There are certain parts of this thing that he didn't know how to measure. The Radak here notices that some of these part things were in Beit Sheni, as I mentioned before. And I close by saying that we have a couple of more prakim of the description. Some of the parts of it we'll be able to get more understanding of, some of it we'll get less understanding of. But part of my defense for my lack of clarity here, along with my apology for my lack of clarity here, is that I think it's unclear in the original, and I think by the vehicle of taping and of radio and of iPod and podcasting, it's impossible to get a picture of it. There are certainly books that have been published that try to give pictures of how it seems to look. Those are accessible and available. I own some, but I find some part of the exercise not all that worthwhile, since in the end, it's not clear that this is what's necessarily going to happen. It might just be this is Yechezkel's particular prediction of it, and then we'll have to think about it. But so far, this is what we have in terms of the walls and the outer walls and the sizes and the building. We have a building that's being built, and we'll see more of it in the coming chapters. Have a great day.